Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of Liberty State, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee-elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left, it's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action, about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is.' For behold, the kingdom of God is inside you," or in some translations, "in your midst." Today, I want to talk about something that is happening all over the country, and it's... there's an article out by Lloyd Marcus, a black American, who talks about the dirty trick of the leftists. And this dirty trick has been used quite frequently, and I've actually seen it in debates. Those that are intellectually challenged, especially in debates, will use this, and I've seen it happen time and time again. Here's how it works. The left is something absolutely nuts, going against the moral foundations of the country, going against the Constitution, bashing Christianity, whatever it is. And there is a reasonable or a reasoned pushback saying, well, actually the facts say opposite of what you're trying to postulate. And on top of that, that's not what the founding documents actually say, or, you know, whatever the reasoned pushback is. And immediately, instead of having a reasoned discussion, these people will immediately try to take you to the ultimate hateful extreme. They'll try to project onto you the ultimate hateful extreme. And they'll throw out words like fascist. And if you actually ask somebody what the origin of that word is, they can't really even tell you. And everybody listening to the show today should go look it up. It's fascinating. The bundle of sticks. That's all I'm going to say. Now, the other interesting thing is they don't understand that fascism, modern fascism, grew out of socialism. Benito Mussolini, along with Antonio Gramsci, by the way, who wrote for the same newspaper, Benito Mussolini was the chief editor of the PSI paper Avanti. Avanti means forward. Okay, now, it's an interesting historical side note that Barack Obama's campaign slogan was forward. This is very interesting. Nothing new under the sun. But the Italian Socialist Party, PSI, ran this paper Avanti. And Benito Mussolini was the chief editor. Antonio Gramsci, who really, a lot of people credit with giving the modern incarnation of Fabian socialism, very clearly laid out that there needed to be a long march through the schools and the universities and the media, and that was how socialism was going to overwhelm Christianity. In fact, he uses the phrase, "Socialism is precisely the religion that will overwhelm Christianity," by marching through these institutions. And if you haven't ever heard of Antonio Gramsci, you should, because he was absolutely right. The schools needed to be infiltrated, the universities needed to be infiltrated, the churches and the media, for socialism to gain traction, and that's exactly what happened. So the PSI paper, Avanti, forward, Barack Obama's campaign slogan, okay? Benito Mussolini was studying things. He was a socialist. There's a very famous picture, actually, with him riding in the car with Adolf Hitler. And what he decided was that fascism was a better economic approach to the way that Italy was already structured in Italian society. He figured out that the government didn't need to control or own every single business, but it should try to control most businesses, things like car makers. And that's a separate topic for a separate day about nationalization of car makers and maybe the healthcare system. Okay. Hitler took Benito Mussolini's policies and then tried to make them better socialist policies and took them to the National Socialist Party in Germany, or the Nazi Party in Germany. This history is extremely clear. Nobody can refute it. At least nobody of true intellectual honesty can refute it. And you can see the picture with Benito Mussolini riding in the car with Hitler. Again, they were socialists. There's no question about this. And there's other people that are trying to revise history. But the fact of the matter is, when you get into the original documents these guys wrote, you read the paper that Benito Mussolini was the chief editor of, you know unequivocally these guys were socialists. All right. So this is important because getting back to what I originally was talking about, this leftist dirty trick of taking people to the most hateful, violent extreme in response to a reasoned pushback, you will hear the word fascism thrown out. And they don't know what that means, because constitutional conservatives and Christians cannot, by definition, be fascist. They can't. Can't by definition actually be socialist either. There's no such thing really as a socialist Christian, because that violates the commandment Christ gave us to love our neighbor, not have government do it for us. The other interesting thing about this is they will throw out everybody is a racist. They will throw out the term racism. And what's fascinating about this is nobody talks about that as far as dividing terms and dividing people, but the left, because for those of us on the constitutional conservative side, we believe, and notice I didn't say right, because I don't believe in a right-left paradigm. I think that it really is a misnomer, and it's a misunderstanding of political science. We believe, as constitutional Christian conservatives, that liberty should apply to everybody, just like Thomas Jefferson wrote in the original draft of the Declaration of Independence that was reported to the Continental Congress I talked about the last show. We believe that it should apply to everybody. It doesn't matter your ethnic background, your origins, your socioeconomic status. None of that matters. It's about liberty for everybody. And so we don't talk in those terms. And so it's hard for Christian constitutional conservatives to understand what the left is even talking about. And candidly, a lot of people are getting sick of this because nobody's having a reasoned conversation. It's just a constant attempt to smear people. And you know that the intellectual midgets out there, who they are, because they can never really talk about anything except throwing these sound bites out. And one of the other things that occurs is they use a targeting sequence to not just smear people, but to try to destroy people. Christian constitutional conservatives don't generally think that way. And Vox Dei actually kind of outlined this. And I've talked about his rules before, that social justice warriors always lie. They attempt to cause division through those lies. They always double down on the lie, and they always project. They always come across as the noble champion of the oppressed or the holy sanctified victim. And really, they're not. But they do always lie, they do always double down on the lie, and they do always project. Well, there's another thing that Vox Dei brings up, and he calls it the social justice warrior targeting sequence. And what he talks about is that it doesn't matter what a Christian, what a constitutionalist, what a conservative says. It does not matter what they say. It doesn't matter how they say it. It doesn't matter how careful they are. And I want everybody out there to listen very carefully to what I'm saying, because I'm running into this quite a bit. It does not matter what they say. how they say it, how careful they are. If they are picked to be a target of the Marxists will just wait for any situation, any statement, any action, because they're already a target. It doesn't matter, again, how careful these people are. They have already been picked to be a target. So the social justice warriors will then, they'll pick that person and they'll make a big deal about what that person has said or some situation. It doesn't matter. And they come after them and relentlessly try to pursue them until the target apologizes. Stop apologizing and stop asking for conservatives and Christians to apologize when these social justice warriors are attacking them. Stop. Because you don't understand the strategy that is being used. Don't ask them to apologize. Now, if they're Christians, if they really did do something wrong, they'll try to admit it. But most of the time, what is happening here is these folks are targeting people and forcing them to feel guilty about something they really didn't do. So stop apologizing. In fact, I would argue if you're apologizing for something you didn't do, that's another lie on top of it. Then what happens in this targeting sequence that the Marxists use is that the apology is then called insufficient or maybe irrelevant. Doesn't matter. It's so bad, there's no apology for it, right? Or it's just not good enough, right? And then they actually increase the pressure on the target. And they try to get the target to resign. They try to get the target to quit, to give up. And that is how they destroy people. And I got to tell you something, that is evil. And you do not fight evil by apologizing to it. I want you to hear that again. You do not fight evil by apologizing to it. You fight evil by standing, as Ephesians 6 says, and not wavering one single inch, and continuing to preach the gospel, make disciples, show tangible love, and talk the truth. I want to add one more thing to this. There are a lot of pastors out there today who say, a lot of business owners too, a lot of business owners who will say, I don't want to support Christians involved in politics. What you are doing by saying that is you are saying that you are not going to support that ministry, expanding the kingdom of Jesus Christ, and you are actually surrendering this country to the Marxists. I want to say this again. You are surrendering this country to the Marxists. How many historical books, how many historical figures like Niemöller, like Bonhoeffer, talked about what should have happened with Christian business owners, Christian pastors, to stand up to the Marxists, to stand up to the socialists? I mean, how many people died, were enslaved, were raped, murdered, abused, persecuted? It might not be your ministry or your calling to be in the political realm, but it is a ministry nonetheless, and we need to treat it that way. And that brings me now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, Israel, latest missile attack by the Israelis in southern Syria hit a new Iranian intelligence post, according to Debka file. Tensions over there really not de-escalating. They're actually increasing pretty dramatically right now. Venezuela, 22 of 23 states without power. Last report that I had, 90% of the country without telecommunications service. Reports out of prisons that there's cannibalism. Pray for the folks down there. Also pray for the folks in Central Africa. Those 100 Christians in Mali burned alive. What I'm getting out of sources that I trust implicitly is that there is effectively a genocide happening in Nigeria right now in the north part of the country. So pray for Christians there as well. And there's a lot of people out there, too, that try to say, oh, you know, these Christians, you don't have any problems. Don't worry about it. And yet, more Christians are dying each year than any other religion. More, bar none. All right, also on the national front, Alaska, in the BLM up there, has decided to open up 1.3 million acres, either to transfer back to the state or to sell, as most state compacts actually allow and actually require. In fact, the compact that Washington, Montana, North Dakota, and South Dakota came into the union with actually designates a portion of those sale proceeds to go to education. A lot of people don't know that. So the BLM is opening up 1.3 million acres. It's a good start. Obviously not enough, but a good start. Also on the national front, Arkansas halting civil asset forfeiture and closing a federal loophole. This coming to us from the New American Magazine. There shall be no civil judgment under this subchapter. No property shall be forfeited unless the person from whom the property is seized is convicted of a felony offense that is related to the property being seized and that permits the forfeiture of the property. That bill went into effect July 24th to effectively abolish civil asset forfeiture in practically all cases in the state of Arkansas. And the vote was unanimous in both houses of the Arkansas legislature. I want to talk about that because we've introduced this in Washington and it keeps getting killed. Even though most people recognize that civil asset forfeiture or the seizure of property without a finding by a jury of guilt or that's unrelated to the crime that you're charged with is wrong and goes against the Constitution. So the last sentiment of that article says hopefully more states will follow the lead of Arkansas. I couldn't agree more. It's just incredible that this was allowed to go on for so long. All right, also on the national front, we have this kind of interesting push today regarding transgenderism and sexual mutilation, otherwise known as gender reassignment. Officials with the Thomas More Society, according to WorldNet Daily, on Wednesday asked the Supreme Court to review a decision by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals that essentially endorsed the decision by county officials to shepherd a boy through a sex change against his mother's wishes. So in other words, it went against her will and they just went around her anyways. They effectively stole the kid. And clearly that's not the rule of government, especially in situations like that. My goodness. All right. Also on the national front, $60 million defunding from Planned Parenthood, fetal tissue research, $100 million stop by Health and Human Services. People still kind of having this weird idea that they know better who should live and who should die. I don't understand this leftist argument. There's a presumption that if these kids live, that they're going to have these horrible lives out there. I mean, it's what we call, at least in the legal field, a presumption of facts, not an evidence, right? There's no way you could possibly know that. They're presuming these kids are going to be terrible. They're going to live terrible lives. And it's fascinating the hypocrisy there. And then out of the other side of their mouth saying, oh, everybody needs, you know, more opportunities. And if you give them the opportunity, they are going to do good. And presuming that. Which is it? Which is it? Fascinating stuff on the abortion issue. I mean, the bottom line is we need to stop abortion in this country. It is blood in the land. It is one human being deciding when another human being lives or dies. As Americans, we have always been against that unless there was due process. So somebody is tried, they're convicted of a serial killer, and then they're put to death. This goes all the way back to the founding arguments in the debates in the Constitutional Convention. This idea of due process over life and liberty and property. And our country can't truly be the land of the free if we're killing babies before they can even be born. Just can't be. All right, also on the national front, this article is even one of the weirdest ones I have seen in a while. But remember The Guardian and Jason Wilson, who was linked to Antifa by PJ Media in that study? 962 Antifa accounts. Okay, so the Guardian has now come out with an article that says, effectively, that U.S. leftist groups are taking up arms and apologizing for their arming up, including the Puget Sound John Brown Gun Club. And they're justifying it in that these people are arming up and have to do violence to stop so-called white supremacy and build community defense against intolerance. Total garbage. Total garbage. There is not an American, except a very small, I mean, you're talking in the small thousands in America, who believe in white supremacy and the KKK and stuff. And oh, by the way, the roots of the KKK are from the Democrat Party. In fact, Dinesh D'Souza did an entire movie about that. You can go watch it. So this isn't about them. This is about justifying the armed violence of the left. Like, this guy who firebombed the ICE facility was wearing a John Brown Gun Club hat and was associated with members of the Puget Sound John Brown Gun Club. And the media is not talking about this, but then The Guardian comes out and is trying to apologize for this. And this is, what, 3 months after they tried to create this fake outrage over members of the right talking about... Look at these guys are actually firebombing ICE facilities and doing this other stuff. Clearly linked, and now we have the mainstream media not just downplaying, we have them apologizing effectively for it. Unbelievable article. If you get a chance, take a look at it. I posted it up on my Facebook page. Unbelievable. And it's public so everybody can see it. Then the Conservative Tribune by the Western Center for Journalism has come out and published an article that says a staggering 91% of Democrats think that violence is on the horizon due to politicians' mean words. And it's their armed groups that are causing this issue. Unreal. All right, I also want to, on the national front, talk about... couple of other things coming from WorldNet Daily. One is that apparently YouTube, which is owned by Google, censored Chad Robichaud and his ministry because it used the word Christian. And they took a screenshot of that, and it says, unacceptable content as keyword, colon, Christian. You can take a look at it for yourself. But this is what we're facing right now. I mean, this is becoming overt persecution of Christianity in America. I want everybody to understand that. And there are other countries right now that are sending missionaries to America because they believe America is a mission field. I want you to think about that, too, especially if you're over the age of 40. Also on the national front from WorldNet Daily, there's a third LGBT attack on a Christian baker. So this guy that owns Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado has beat the leftist twice, and now he's being attacked a third time and going to court. So please pray for Jack Phillips, brave, brave man. I mean, wow. Now they're claiming he's discriminatory because he's not using his cake artistry to celebrate transgenderism. You know, I asked this question a while back, and there wasn't an answer when I asked this question. I said, if you put a gun to somebody's head and you say, go to church right now, people would be just outraged, rightfully so. And yet, you're using the force of government to have somebody participate in an activity against their conscience. What's the difference? Practically speaking, what is the difference? You can't force somebody to go do that against their conscience. Otherwise, that is, by definition, tyranny. By definition. All right. On the regional front, I want to talk quickly about two things. First, another reason for Liberty State, there are going to be 12, count them, 12 tax advisory votes on the ballot here in November, because that's how many tax increases the Democrats decided to pass this year. Second issue on the regional front, how long and how much more of the wolf can we take? And this is an opinion piece by our great friend Steve McLaughlin. We're going to try to get him on the show here in the next week or so. And he poses this question, how long could you afford to lose 20% of your annual income while at the same time working longer hours trying to mitigate your losses? Not long. And that's exactly what's happening to ranchers in Washington State. Exactly what's happening. So anyway, take a look at that opinion piece. That's pretty good. Lastly, on the local front, August 17th, Marble, Washington, Tom DeWeese, Dan Happel, Reverend Matthew Cummings going to be up there. August 17th, Marble, Washington. It's the Land of the Free Conference, and it's going to be 10 to 6 p.m. I think there's a barbecue there, too. And if you get a chance, you should make it up there. Really should. All right, also on the local front, want to go briefly down the key contested races. Now, you can go to voteshade.com. Click on Solutions and then Matt's Take on Elections. Spokane City Mayor Jonathan Bingle. Spokane City Council President Mike Fagan. Spokane City Council District 1 Tim Benn. Spokane City Council District 2 Tony Keepy. Spokane City Council District 3 Jeff Martin. And City of Spokane Valley Position 2 Michelle Rasmussen. City of Spokane Valley Position 3 Arnie Woodard. City of Spokane Valley, Position 6, Bo Tucker. Now, I want to say something about Spokane Valley. There is Spokane Valley has been targeted by the progressives intentionally to try to take over. One directly linked progressive candidate whose voting record is socialist is sitting on the council right now and running for re-election. We need to keep Spokane Valley conservative, folks. Tell your friends and family, make sure they're voting. They get out to vote. And they're voting conservative, so we can keep Spokane Valley separate from the decline of the city of Spokane, which is heading the way of downtown Seattle. All right, that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been praying for us and the show. And go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And remember, if you want to keep us on the air, you can go to VoteShea.com. And I also want to remind everybody, Patriot Radio is on iTunes and Podbean. A shout out to the trucking community. Thanks for all your wonderful support. All right. My guest today is somebody that's going to be up here on August 17th, my great friend, Tom DeWeese of the American Policy Center. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thank you for having me.
Well, there is so much happening right now. I want to talk about a couple things, and then I'll let you get into a couple of topics you want to talk about. There's been a lot of articles out there about the World Wildlife Fund and some of the scandal surrounding the World Wildlife Fund. If you could kind of catch the listeners up to that, because a lot of that news has not trickled down to the local level. So if you could, tell the listeners a little bit about what's happening.
Yeah. The World Wildlife Fund is one of the top three most powerful environmental organizations in the world, and they are one of the leaders of the UN environmental program, and all this sustainable stuff you hear about, all these attacks on private property and so forth, they're leading it. And there have been some scandals that have come out about them down in Brazil. They have managed to lock away over 50% of the land in the nation of Brazil into parks where nobody can use the land. And you always hear environmentalists talking about the indigenous people, and these are folks, you know, to be worshipped because they only use just what they need, and that's sustainable, and they don't, you know, do a whole lot of other things. The indigenous people in Brazil, if they find a World Wildlife Fund or a Nature Conservancy activist, they want to take them out into the rainforest and never see them again. You know, it's these people are vicious. They are dangerous. They have done things to actually hurt people who won't, you know, go along with their policies. And these are people who have taken over things like the American beef industry. So I don't know how far you want me to go with that.
Well, I think it's a great segue, actually, because there is an attack on the American beef industry, and predominantly because of unfair competition without any sort of labeling to know where your beef is coming from. Most Americans would want to buy American beef, not Brazilian beef, because of quality control issues. Tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, this is what's happened. The beef industry has come under attack, particularly by the World Wildlife Fund and others. They have established the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, and it's really tragic that the National Beef Growers Association is going along with this, and they're letting these snakes in under their tent, and they're, you know, using the language of sustainability supposedly is going to make our beef better quality and so forth. This is what you hear with this roundtable. They're forcing the ranchers, the cattlemen, to meet specific sustainable regulations to in their growing of their beef. And the thing is that there are literally only four packing companies in the country, and they're the ones with the market. The cattlemen don't have the market, and so these packers are now under the control of the World Wildlife Fund and this this regulations on meeting these sustainable rules. And the sustainable rules are designed to force the cattlemen to put so much of their land away for wildlife preservation. They have to meet specific ways that they raise the beef, or they can't even get veterinarians to take care of their beef or their cattle. And this is all being run by the World Wildlife Fund, which has said that the only way to save the earth is to stop beef consumption. And yet the Cattlemen Association are allowing them to come in and make these kind of regulations on them. And I asked some of them why. I said, why would you do this? And they said that the beef industry, the cattlemen have been under such assault by the environmentalists, by the animal rights people, and they figured that, well, okay, we'll just put this word sustainable in here, and they'll get off our back, and that'll be a pressure valve release. And instead, they don't understand that the goal here is to put them out of business, and the environmentalists claim that the land where they're using for grazing for the cattle could be converted to raise wheat and soy, and that could feed many, many more people than beef. And this is our argument. And, of course, under sustainable development, they always have some kind of crisis. Everything's a crisis. We have a food crisis. Well, we don't have a food crisis, so we don't have to kill industries in order to convert us all to vegan menus and, the wheat and soy, which is where they're headed. This is just the political goals of a bunch of private organizations that have managed to work their way into our food industry. They've already taken over the poultry industry. They've taken over the pork industry and a lot of the dairy industry. Now they've turned their heads onto the beef industry, and this is we will very. And as you mentioned earlier, the taking away the label of origin, of country of origin, this was one of the first steps they did. The United States, the beef industry here has always been outstanding, has always led the way to much higher quality than other places in the world. And now we don't know where the beef is coming from. You go into the grocery, you pick it up, you don't know where it's come from. But look what's starting to happen in the news. You are seeing reports of tainted beef, of beef that's diseased, things like that. And this is because the beef is not necessarily coming from the United States. And it's interesting because when your goal is to get people to stop eating beef, having diseased beef being exposed on the market, you suddenly find people say, well, I'm not going to buy beef anymore. Bingo, they've won that round. And that is one of the reasons for that. And what I'm working on, I'm working with the beef industry, the cattlemen who are trying to fight back on this, and try to get the consumers to understand what is going on here. And as I said, the packers own the market, and they're forcing these cattlemen to follow their rules, or they don't have a market. And the way to fight back on that is for the consumer to demand that there is a label of country of origin on the beef, know where it's coming from, and refuse to buy it in the grocery if they don't have that. We need to have consumers starting to push back to save the beef industry from these people who literally their goal is to put them out of business.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And not only are they facing just massive overregulations, but also this whole issue of the wolf, especially in our area of the country.
Yeah. I was just in Colorado to the Colorado Independent Cattle Growers Association this weekend, and there was a gentleman who did a whole presentation on the wolf issue. And, the thing with the wolves, They keep trying to tell us. You have Dave Foreman from Earth First, who came up originally, was the one pushing this idea, and that idea became part of the whole process he was putting through the Wildlands Project, taking 50% of all the land in every state and returning it back to what they call rewild it back to the way it was before Christopher Columbus. That's the thing. That became part of the UN's biodiversity treaty. And this 50-50 thing now, this is what you're facing. The whole point is to get people, the cattlemen, the ranchers, people off the rural lands and herd them into the cities. And when we first started saying that 20 years ago, people say, oh, come on, how do you do that? The answer to that is you make it impossible to live on the land, and they have no choice. And these are the steps you're seeing: control the water, control the land, the grazing areas, and pretty soon they can't survive.
And I want to take this even a step further. We talked a while back about this idea of apartments, or 200 square foot apartments, if you will call them that. And they were trying to herd everybody into these kind of circle cities and all this futurist stuff that they had put out publicly on the internet. And now we're seeing that just not just to own acreage, but just to own a single family home, that now they're saying that just a single family home is now racist if you own that, right? In an attempt again to get people away from even owning property.
Yeah, the word they use, the argument they use is that people who live in single-family homes and have zoning to protect single-family homes are racist because they are self-segregating themselves from people they don't want to live in their neighborhood. People of different races, people of different income levels and so forth, don't want them to live there, so they the single-family home zoning is racist, and we've got to stop that. Then the second thing they come up with is, well, we have a housing crisis, and we don't have room for people to have yards and things like that. Why, on that property where you have a single-family home with one family living on it, we could build apartment buildings on there and have 100 families live there, and that's what we've got to do. This is the argument that is taking place. And the we started with Minneapolis, Minnesota, where they were one of the first to begin to ban single-family home zoning. Seattle, Washington has been following into that. And a lot of this is coming from HUD, the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing rule that came under Barack Obama, where they forced the cities to do all kinds of assessments in the neighborhoods to break it down into the income levels, the religion, the national origin, you know, that sort of thing, race. And then HUD decides, is your neighborhood in balance? But nobody knows what balance means because HUD doesn't tell you. They just tell you you're out of balance. And so you have got to change that. The answer to doing that, HUD comes up with, is, well, instead of single-family homes, we need to move in apartment buildings and things like that. All of this is really a move, Matt, to destroy private property, and in the smart growth programs with these stack and pack high-rise housing, this is all the sustainable development where a community is completely self-sufficient, grows its own food, and everybody lives in these apartment buildings, and we cut back the carbon footprint. We did all this kind of, this is all the arguments they use. And where this is headed, once people are beginning to move into the cities and they get a, they're basically a rental property, now they're starting to say to the private landlords, well, people can't afford to pay those higher rents. We're going to put rent controls on it. Now the landlords can't keep going with what they're doing. What's the alternative? Where does this lead? It's very obvious. All housing in this country, all homes, will be government housing. No private property and no personal choice on what you do. This is Agenda 21, smart growth, sustainable development. This is where it's headed. And we're seeing the attack on the landlords. We're seeing the attack on single-family homes. We're seeing the attack on the cattle industry and the ranchers. Everywhere you look, these things are hurting it into that situation.
I mean, really what we're talking about is an attack on – I mean, this is an attack on freedom. All the way across the board, it's just an attack on freedom. And we see this – you know, I remember years ago, Pete, if you brought up the idea of one world religion or the idea of gun confiscation or some of these things, people would say, no, there's no way that's going to happen. Tom, we love you, but that's just not going to happen in America. And yet now we're having these discussions are actually out there.
There are more discussions because this is going on in literally every single community in the country, and Oregon is becoming the first state. I don't know whether the governor signed the bill yet or not, but was going to. I knew a week ago to ban single family homes there. And the interesting thing they have, and she's yelling housing crisis. Well, here you have Portland, Oregon, which has been the poster child for this from the very beginning, and they put these urban growth boundaries around the city. That's what smart growth does. They put this line around the city, urban growth boundary, and they say no growth will take place outside of that because that's urban sprawl, and that means that we have to build more infrastructure and more roads and more people will be driving cars and, oh, the horror of it all. And so we got to stop that. And well, what's happened in Portland is exactly what we predicted. Since they started doing this over the last several years, the population of Portland has grown over 80% since they put these urban growth boundaries in place. Now, what's happening in Portland? You have nowhere to go but up. And, you know, so that's why they have a housing crisis, no room for single-family homes. The thing is that Portland doesn't have a real problem. It's got a problem with government. This is stupid government control that is causing this. And so the solution is we'll get rid of single-family homes and we'll fix that. No, you won't, because the population is going to grow another 80% in several years, and you have less and less and less. And what you were just talking about is this thing of now we have to have the apartments in these houses. They only go so high. Eventually, you get into thin air. You can't go any higher. So you have to make every apartment smaller and smaller and smaller. Where does that lead in the future? And yet we've got all this land across the country that we're not allowed to touch.
That we're not allowed to touch. We're not allowed to develop in a way that can produce wealth. We're not allowed to use for charity. And, you know, I mean, it really is strangling. I mean, it just straight up is strangling freedom. You know, I've looked at this. We've talked about these types of things for years, and now we're at a point where we have to choose sides, and we have to get off the fence and get out there and make something happen. Tom, if you could, what can people do to truly fight back against these things? And also, you're going to be up here August 17th. Tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah. As I travel the country, and I've been all over the country this year, it's just been unbelievable. I hear so many people saying we can't win, we've lost everything, there's nothing we can do. They're looking down at their shoes in defeat, you know, all that. And I refuse to do that. I am not going to surrender our American freedom to these fools. And people say, how do you stay so positive? It's because I see people beginning to wake up to this, beginning to understand what the problem is. And I'll tell you, I have never been busier since our little friend from New York, the former bartender, has introduced the Green New Deal. Suddenly, people get it. As we talked about Agenda 21, people couldn't grasp it and think, oh, how are they going to do that? Now we've got a bill. And now we've got all these debates going on about this insanity, and people are beginning to see it. That is to our advantage. I am starting to see some elected officials, city councilmen, county commissioners, who are starting to say, whoa, this is kind of nuts. That's a good thing. Here's what happens in our cities. There are these non-governmental organizations, the Sierra Club, the World Wildlife Fund, the Nature Conservancy, groups like that, all kinds of the American Planning Association, ICLEI. These groups have surrounded your local elected representatives, and they are pressuring them to take these federal grants, and this is how this is all flowing into our cities. The one thing that is missing in all of this are the people. You go to these public meetings and no one's there. But I have seen in communities where people do come in, people do start to get active, they take control and they begin to turn things around. And they are terrified that you'll learn that. All of this, sustainable development, has this little bit of kryptonite in it that they don't want you to know about. This is what can kill all their policies. That kryptonite is protection of private property rights. You cannot implement sustainable development policies without destroying private property. And if you just focus on that one thing, then you can begin to turn this around and block them for what they're doing. But people aren't doing that, and that's what we've got to do.
Karl Marx, chapter 2 of his Communist Manifesto, that's exactly what he said, abolish private property.
Yeah.
And this is just a goal. Yeah.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, I'm going to be up your way the 17th of August. And Reverend Matthew Cummings is a gentleman I met at the Red Pill Expo last year. I've never bonded with a man so quickly in my life. I love this man, and we have just become really good friends. And he invited me to come up there to speak and to lay all this out and tell people what this is all about and how to fight back. And so I'm going to come up and do it.
Awesome. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, hearing you, but also in that particular venue in this beautiful valley with mountains surrounding it. That is what freedom looks like. I love it. I really do.
Yeah.
As you've been traveling around the country, Tom, I'm sure there's a couple things that you want to talk about as well, but particularly with young people and everybody else that maybe doesn't know what this is going on, how are you actually getting their attention and motivating them to get involved?
Well, you know, the more this grows, the more these policies are put in place, the more victims you have. And you got victims, you got people who understand. And, you know, or at least they understand there's a problem. They don't necessarily know what to do about it or where it comes from. That's what I do, is I give them the basis for it. And believe it or not, I've been a few places where seeing some very interesting young people who are getting into it, who are starting to understand. And I've had other people tell me about their experience with some of them. And, you know, when I came up, when I started getting involved when I was a kid, I got, you know, college campuses and stuff, I got involved with Young Americans for Freedom. This is where I learned economics, where I learned philosophy, and I learned activism. They are still there. Their campus chapters are growing by leaps and bounds. That means there are thousands of young people now who are being taught about the founding fathers, about our system of government and free enterprise and private property and all that, and that's growing. So you're seeing the really bad people on television and what they're doing, but these people are on the campuses. These conservative kids are on the campuses, and they're courageously fighting back. So I'm very, very encouraged by what I'm learning there, what they're doing.
And Tom, anything else that's on your mind that you've been dealing with, the listeners should know? I want to kind of ask you an open-ended question like that, because I know there's things that you may have just heard of today that this would be the cutting edge.
You know, it's you know, as we talk about all these programs and, you know, trying to make them come down to your level and understand how you're affected by it, I was struck by the news this week that in New York, the power company there, with all the heat wave we were having, shut power down, and they don't have any reserves. We have talked about the wind power and the solar power, I mean, the Green New Deal, all these other programs, we're talking about going to that totally exclusively. That's all we're going to have. California has said within 10 years that's what we're going to do, only wind and solar and that sort of thing. Well, what's happened is they have brought this very unstable power, that's hardly any power at all, onto the grid. And then when they have peak usage, they've got to cut back. Because otherwise, the grid will collapse. Well, this is what the power company in New York City did. And all of a sudden, Mayor de Blasio, who has introduced his own Green New Deal, and we're going to convert everything to wind and solar and all that, he gets really upset with the power company, because they're an evil corporation, you understand, and you know, says, this will not stand. I won't let this. Here is a lesson of exactly what we're warning people about, why this doesn't work, why we've got to get government out of this, get these environmentalists and put them back in their cages wherever they came from, and begin to restore our freedom and our free enterprise system and have sanity. Here they are fighting their own policies and saying this will not stand. You know, this, I found that very interesting, and that just came out this week. So it just drives home what we're warning people about. This is real, and we have got to stand up to it. We have got to start going to local government meetings and so forth and get involved and understand what they're doing to you.
Tom, if people want to get more information about you, find out more about American Policy Center, where can they go?
Our website is AmericanPolicy.org, and on that site we have an archive of articles that go back a long time, so you can see how we have building blocks on how we put this together. We cover the education issue as well as the property rights issue and environmental issue, even personal privacy. We have a lot of articles on that, all the intrusion of you know, the digital facial recognition, all that kind of thing. We got articles on that. I have several books that I've written. We've done a lot of tools to help people fight back. I'm working on something right now. I don't want to go into the details on it, but when we get this done, I have said this is the atom bomb for our side against these policies, and really going to give activists a major tool to fight back with. And just today we made some progress on it. So I'm excited about that, and I want to get that into the hands of people. But my book, Sustainable, is a handbook on how to what this is all about and how to fight back. And you can all get all that on our website at AmericanPolicy.org.
Tom, thanks for everything that you're doing. Keep up the fight, and we look forward to seeing you on August 17th. And I know the listeners that are out there right now are figuring out how to get up there and be a part of it. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Absolutely. I hope they're there, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
All right. God bless.
Thanks.
Tom DeWeese, American Policy Center, once again, just a great guest. And what a freedom fighter. I mean, he called this stuff. I remember when I first met him, I was over a decade ago. He called this stuff back then to chilling detailed accuracy. And now we're seeing it. There really isn't a question, do we stand up and fight? It's just, are you going to be the one that's going to be standing up and fighting? Are you going to be the one that's on the other side? You know, that's really the question right now. And yes, it is that polarized, because we're talking about the very survival of our country. We're talking about the very survival of our state. We need to get involved in politics, especially Christians. It is a ministry field. And if we don't take the ground, evil takes the ground. And that's the whole point behind the kingdom of Jesus Christ being spread over the whole world. And I want to emphasize one last thing. You know, as more things are exposed coming, you know, in the future, in the lead up to this next election, be circumspect in your decisions. Pray, listen to that still small voice of Holy Spirit, and follow it to the letter. This is Matt Shea. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you, and may He make this generation the greatest one.